Okay, there we go. So this week's parsha is Parsha's Vayera. There's a lot going on in this week's parsha. We have the beginning of the parsha. We have Hashem coming to visit Avraham and the subsequent arrival of the three angels with their different roles to play. And then we have one of the angels informs Avraham that his wife Sarah is going to have a child. We have the announcement by Hashem to Avram that he is planning on destroying the city of Sodom and the surrounding cities, the surrounding environs, because of their very sinful ways. And then Avram attempts to pray, or he does. He prays to Hashem to spare the cities. And Hashem tells him there's not 50 righteous men, there's not 45, there's not 40, there's not 30. And Avram, realizing that there's really no hope for Sodom, so after he asks if there are 10 righteous people in the city, will you spare the city? After he gets back a negative response, Avram basically throws in the towel and he leaves. The angels go to Sodom. Hang on a minute. The angels go to Sodom and they encounter Lot. Lot invites them into his home at much great personal risk. The angels, after initially refusing, they acquiesce and they come in. How are you? Good. Okay. If you'd like to serve yourself, please help yourself. All right. And there's seats over there. Seats over there. So whatever works. And after they come into the home, the people of Sodom find out that he has done this terrible thing of having over guests, and so the people of Sodom surround Lot's home. Lot tries to placate them with his daughters instead. Okay, this, by the way, is where the term sodomy comes from, is because the people of Sodom say, send out the men so that we can have our way with them. Okay, and Lot instead offers his daughters, which maybe was what, you know, maybe we'll talk about Lot a little bit today, and what Lot was, and so on, because, you know, in trying to save his guests, he is instead, you know, offering a almost equally terrible, and handing over his own daughters instead to be assaulted. And the people say, no, sorry, we're not interested in that. And they try to attack the house. The angels smite them with blindness. The angels tell Lot, get out, we're destroying the city. Lot is trying to get together as much of his possessions as possible. And the angels say, no time for that, just get out of the city. You don't have the merits to be saved with all of your possessions. Just get out. Don't turn around. Don't look at what's going on. Just get out with whichever family members you're able to grab. And they flee. On the way out, Lot's wife turns around, which she's not supposed to do, and she's turned into a pillar of salt. Okay, which actually someone sent me a great, I just want to make sure I get it right, a great comic yesterday of Lot's wife sitting in the doctor's office. And the doctor says, your sodium level is off the charts again, Mrs. Lot. To which Mrs. Lot replies, you're right, doc. Looking back, I guess I've always turned to salt. That is very good. That's this week's line. Looking back, I guess I've always turned to salt. So that is the line of the week. Keep that in your pocket. So she turns to salt. The rest of them flee. The angels encourage Lot to go to the mountain, which is where Avram is. In other words, they're encouraging Lot to get back together with Avram, and where he was in better shape. Lot says, no, thank you. And he ends up staying. He ends up staying in a different area, ends up in a cave. His daughters think they're the only people left in the world. And they say, if we don't have children now, all of humanity will cease to exist. And so they hatch a plot to get their father to have relations with them. They get him drunk. He sleeps with the first one on the first night. The next day, they get him drunk again, and he sleeps with the second one on the second night. They both miraculously become pregnant, miraculously, because generally, just without getting involved in all the physiological details, it's not really practical to become pregnant from the first act, just due to various physiological realities, again, without getting involved in all the details. And so they both become pregnant, and they have children whom they name Ammon and Moab, who will become the founders of two great nations, Ammon and Moab, who will be a thorn in the side of the Jewish people. After that, Avram goes with Sarah to the land of the Philistines. which, by the way, is the namesake for the name Palestine. FYI, because the Romans, after destroying the Second Temple, in order to stick it to the Jews, they named the land after their old nemesis, the Philistines. They called it Palestine, which I guess was Philistine in, you know, Roman, Latin, whatever. And Palestine. What's that?
Palestine.
Palestine. Oh, that's in what language?
Cretan.
Okay. I know a lot of Cretans, but that's as far as.
But do you speak their language?
No, I don't. And once again, we go through the whole situation of Avraham saying that Sarah is his sister, which to some degree she was close family, was his niece, in order to avoid being killed for his wife. Avimelech takes Sarah to his home and into his bedroom, and suddenly, he runs into all sorts of problems. Says that Avimelech and his entire household, all of their bodily orifices, got closed up, which, if you can imagine, could be rather uncomfortable. And Avimelech realized something is afoot. God comes in the middle of the night and says, why did you take this man's wife? And Avimelech says, wife? He told me that she's his sister. How should I know that it's his wife? I didn't do anything wrong. I just kidnapped this poor lady, you know, without asking her permission and so on. This was before the days of Me Too, and he was the boss. And, what was she going to say? And Hashem says, innocent, I wouldn't quite call you. You know, fully guilty and knowingly taking a married woman, maybe not, but innocent, you're not. You know, when guests come to town, the first question, as the Gemara explains, what was going on between the lines over here, God says, Avimelech, when guests come to town, the first question you ask is not, who's that woman? No, that's not the question you should be asking. The question you're asking is, do you have a place to eat? Do you have a place to sleep? How can we help you? And the fact that you jumped right to, you know, what your one-track mind took you to, what gave Avraham, pause in terms of his response, and therefore he felt he had no choice in responding as he did. Return his wife, and he'll pray for you, which he does, and their orifices are reopened. And the Talmud says, anyone who prays for his fellow is answered first himself, as Abraham and Sarah, Avraham and Sarah, were waiting for a salvation of their own in the form of a child. And so immediately afterwards, the Torah tells us that Sarah conceived, and she has a child, Yitzchak, who was circumcised at age 8 days, the first Jewish child to be circumcised at that age. They make a big party. And Yishmael was circumcised last week's parasha. Okay. He was 13.
Yeah.
Which is a tradition the Arabs carry on until this day.
Rabbi Fleischer.
Yes, hang on. Yeah, go ahead.
So did Lot's
I'm not here. Could you speak up? You're not coming through very well.
Did Lot's daughters have any long-term plans? Like, how are you going to repopulate the planet with two boys?
I don't know. I don't know what their long-term, they were still two females. I don't know what their long-term plans were or when they found out that, the world was still existing, just not in their immediate vicinity. So I don't know. I guess they figured they had to do something, you know, and they would figure it out from there. You know, I guess when you're in crisis, you can only take the next logical step. Okay. But it is clear from the Talmud that they had noble intentions, albeit, you know, the whole situation is somewhat not ideal, obviously, but in terms of the whole incestuous situation, but they had noble intentions. If I have a moment, I'll tell you just how far that idea goes. But exactly what their long-term plans were, I don't know. You know, I guess they figured if they can have a relationship with their father, they can do with their kids as well if need be. Okay. I know it doesn't, I'm still waiting, for someone to start a movement to allow that kind of stuff as well. You know, in the United States, everything else is allowed. So why not that? But so for some reason, it hasn't taken off yet, at least most parts of the country.
I've lost track. What's not allowed? What
incestuous relationships?
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, I just want
yes.
to ask a question because I kept my memory since I just got over last week. The names of the two boys are very important.
Yes, I'm getting to that.
Okay. So.
Yes, I'm getting to that right now. So just to illustrate just how far the nobility of their intention goes, the names Ammon and Moav are related to the fact that these children came from their father. Okay, Moav means me'av, from the father. And Ammon actually comes from the word Ami, means my nation, which connects to the idea that this child is a product of someone very closely related to me, but in more of an allusion instead of explicitly saying it. And in fact, the second daughter who named her child Amon, which is not as explicit, it's a more modest way of expressing it. Instead of saying this kid's from my father, she said this is the child of my nation, so to speak, as in someone very close to me, without saying it straight out. So actually she is commended for going about it more modestly. Here's a story which Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said over he was the leading halachic authority in the United States until his passing in 1986. And he's still regarded as one of the greatest halachic authorities of the 20th century. And he was a rabbi in the town of Luban in Russia for many years before he was forced to emigrate because the Soviet Union wasn't fond of rabbis. And so, as I'm sure you know, right? And so he had to emigrate. He emigrated from the Soviet Union to the United States in the 1930s. He was already a major, figure in Russia at a young age, you know, in the Soviet Union. Anyways, he related the following story. When he was a rabbi in Luban, a story happened where one of his congregants suddenly developed an illness where his tongue was swelling up inside his mouth and was basically slowly strangling him. Some sort of terrible illness. I don't know exactly the details. So he went to visit this congregant, and their congregant related the following amazing, if in this case tragic, story. The previous week in shul, in synagogue, while they were reading the parsha of Vayera, so the congregant commented when they read this part of the parsha about Amon and Moav, these two nations, and how the daughters had named it after their father, because it was a product of the father. So the congregant made a comment and said, you know, what depraved individuals these two women were, that they would not only have a relationship with their father, but they would then go ahead and publicize it by naming the children after the nature of how they were conceived, where they came from. Okay, and he was criticizing these two women. So that night, or shortly thereafter, he had a dream. And in the dream, he beheld two very holy-looking women came to him and told him, "We are Lot's daughters." This is the story that Rabbi Feinstein related that happened to him in Luban. "We are Lot's daughters, and you spoke badly of us, and you think that we, you know, were these terrible, depraved people who wanted nothing more than just, you know, to have a relationship with our father, and we were so proud of it that we named the child after." They said, "No, we wanted to make sure that no one would decide that because these children, you know, where did these women become pregnant from? They wouldn't have had a relationship with their father, so it must have been an immaculate conception. And in order to avoid anyone walking around saying anything of that idea and starting a new religion or something of that sort, we made sure to make it clear from their names where they came from to avoid that kind of scenario." Okay, and they told this fellow that because you spoke so badly of us, you know, you will be punished through your tongue. And so his tongue swelled up. There's different versions of what happened to the guy afterwards. Some version of that he indeed died. It is interesting that there's no shortage of people who have spoken critically about great people historically, certainly not over the last couple centuries, where everyone is busy psychoanalyzing every great person in the Torah, you know, and sticking them on their own psychological couch and saddling them with all their own personal psychological issues. But it seems in this case, this fellow, maybe he was on a level that he was taken to task for it. This is the story that Rabbi Feinstein related. So we talk about the noble intent of these two women. There was noble intent over there. Okay, just to round out the parasha, and then we will get back to Lot. So after this, after the birth of Yitzchak, of Isaac, the Torah says that Avram makes a great feast to celebrate after he is weaned, after he finishes nursing. Avram makes a great feast. He invites all of the great famous people in the area. Everyone comes. Sarah, to prove that at the age of 90, she is indeed capable of having a child, she nurses all of the children that anyone brings to show that she is indeed capable. This wasn't a foundling whom they found on the street, which is what some people were saying. Okay. After that, we have the problems with Yishmael. Yishmael is acting out and he's misbehaving. Okay. And he's getting into fights with Yitzchak. He's attacking Yitzchak. He is committing all sorts of sins. And so Sarah sees what's going on and she tells Avram, You got to send him packing. Send him and his mother packing from the house. And Avram is very upset about this. And Hashem tells Avram, listen to Sarah. Listen to what your wife says. And anything she says, listen to her. Our sages tell us that From here we see God is telling Avram that Sarah is a greater prophetess than Avram was a prophet. And so they say, you know, send them out. Avram sends out Yishmael and Hagar to the desert. He gives them some water. And they go out. Yishmael becomes ill in the desert. They run out of water. And it looks like this is the end of the line for Yishmael. Hagar tosses him behind some bushes. She goes far away to cry. Commentators point out what kind of mother, as her child is dying, leaves her son to die on his own. So she couldn't bear to be with him, but it's her son. Like, you know, you've got to be there for him. And some want to draw parallels to today's day and age where some nations are happy to send their kids out to die, and that's the glory they have for them and so on. But we're not going to go there today. And suddenly, and Yishmael, our sages tell us, has a change of heart, and he does teshuvah. He repents, and an angel comes to Hagar and says, there's a well here. Don't you see the well? And God opens her eyes, and lo and behold, there's a well. She draws water. She gives her son to drink. He is saved. They are saved. They survive. She takes a wife for her son from Egypt, where she came from originally. She's an Egyptian princess. And Yishmael lives happily ever after, becomes a highway robber, and eventually founds the nations of the Arabs. And they are still charging us for gasoline to drive on the highways until this day at very high prices. So the highway robbery continues. That's the story of Yishmael. And then finally, we have the parsha story of the Akedah at the end of the parsha. At the Akedah, where Hashem comes and tells Avram, I want you to bring your son Yitzchak as a sacrifice on the mountain, which I will tell you. And Avram asks no questions. He brings Yitzchak, puts him on the altar. He's about to slaughter him. And at the last moment, an angel comes and stays his hand, says, stop, and take him down. Avram says, one second, you told me to bring him up as a sacrifice. God says, no. I said, bring him up as an offering. You brought him up on the altar. Now take him down. And this is regarded by most commentators as the greatest trial Avram had to go through. And Hashem makes it very clear to Avram that the merit he has for his willingness to sacrifice everything, not just his son, it's his son and everything that he has, all the hopes for the future of the Jewish nation in this son. Okay, this is his entire life is about to come to an end. As far as he knows, everything that he's worked on his whole life is about to come to an end right here. And so Hashem tells Avram that you and your descendants will reap great reward from this act of selflessness. And the parasha closes with Avram being informed that his extended family has also had a family, children and grandchildren, including a young girl named Rivka, who we will hear a lot about in next week's parasha. Okay, but it's kind of leaves you hanging at the end of the parasha this week. Oh yeah, his brother Nachar had a bunch of kids, and they had kids, including this nice girl named Rivka, and there the parsha closes. Okay, and that's the parsha. Like I said, there's a lot going on in this week's parsha, and there's a lot to talk about, but we only have 25 minutes. So, let's talk about Lot. Okay, there's a lot to talk about in Lot. Yes, go ahead.
Before we go to Lot, can we talk about something else for a sec?
You can try.
Okay, so in Lech Lecha, we have this whole thing that Avram asked Sarai to be his sister, and
well, to pose as his sister.
And we know, I'm not here for the story, but the Ramban is very critical of what Avram has done. Now,
in terms of going down to Egypt?
No, well, it depends.
Okay.
He's critical of the fact that he lets his wife be so vulnerable, basically.
Okay.
So I understand all that, but he does this again. And that part I don't understand, because it was considered, my understanding is it was considered a mistake.
Okay.
The first time, and now he's doing it yet again.
Okay. So, it's a fair question. So just for those on Zoom who did not hear the question, I have to repeat questions from Zoom for you and from you for the Zoom.
Was Yishmael 13 years older than Yitzchak?
Yes.
No, 14. 14. 14.
By a year.
You are, because he was circumcised at 13, and then Yitzchak was born a year later.
Okay. Yes. Right.
14. Okay. So, the question is that, as Patty points out, Avram is criticized by the Ramban that Avram made a mistake in last week's parasha when he came to the land. The famine, so Avram goes down to Egypt, puts his wife Sarai at risk. Pharaoh abducts her, and the Ramban is critical. He's critical of this, and Avram seemingly does the same thing again. So 2 points to that, and then I'll take Mrs. Elias. I'll take your question in a moment. So 2 points. Number one, a lot of other commentators strongly disagree with the Ramban in his position that Avram made a mistake. Rashi actually says that it was a trial, one of Avram's 10 trials, that he actually was forced to go down to Egypt, and he could not question God as saying, you schlep me all the way here to Canaan, and then I have to leave? Like, that's what I came in for, so I have to leave again? And that was a trial that he had to go through to not question God in forcing him to go down to Egypt. So Rashi clearly understands that it was not a mistake. The Ramban's language is, he says, that a chet gadol chata Avram, a great sin was sinned by Avram in going down to Egypt. And one of the other commentators, I forget who, says, chet gadol chata Ramban. He says the Ramban sinned a great sin in criticizing Avram for this move. So there are others who sharply disagree with the Ramban's position. Now, according to the Ramban's position, I think the bigger issue over there was not just that he endangered Sarah, it was that he left Canaan without authorization. God had told him, go to the land of Canaan.
I know that's yeah. Shit.
That was the main criticism. I think the fact that he also maybe also endangered her in the process was a secondary criticism. But I think that over here he had to go to the land of the Philistines. He had to go to the land of the Philistines, and that was part of the land of Israel, of Canaan at the time. You're talking about what's today Gaza, that part of the country. Disengagement or otherwise, it is part of the land of Israel. And Rash, and so he probably felt he had no choice but to put on this charade that Sarah is his sister. There is an interesting addendum to your point, though. That's all I have to say about it. I don't have more to say at this point. One addendum is that Rashi points out that the first time around, Avram tries to get Sarah to buy in and says, please make believe you're my sister, and then things will work out. They won't kill me. The second time around, there's no such conversation. Rashi says that he didn't ask her this time.
He speaks to her, but we do not hear back from her.
He doesn't speak to her. He just says about her, she's my sister. The second time around. The first time you mean. Yeah. So it seems like he got her agreement or her buy-in on it. The second time around, he doesn't ask her. He just says, we're making believe you're my sister. And Rashi says that he didn't ask for her agreement because she wasn't so agreeable. And because of what happened the first time, so he just said, this is what we're doing, like it or not. We have no choice. They're going to kill me. And so he kind of forced it on her in order to save his life. But I'm not aware that he was taking the task for doing that. It seems like he had no choice. He had to put her at risk and had faith in God that God would take care of her rather than put his life on the line. Now you're going to ask, well, why can't he have faith that God will take care of him? That's a good question. So the answer may be that in terms of giving up one's life, you're not obligated to give up your life to avoid committing a sin except for the three cardinal sins. This may be one of them, except that for a woman who is passive, a woman is allowed to engage in an illicit relationship to save her life if she is passive. And so in this context, that's what they say by Esther. How is Esther allowed to allow herself to be taken by Ahasuerus? She was passive. If it's passive, according to many opinions, then it's permitted. And so it seems like it was the lesser of two evils in the context, even though that may not sit well with, you know, the modern picture of things, but that seems to be the reality of how Avram viewed it. Okay? Okay. Ms. Elias, you had a question, but you do have to unmute yourself. There's a button there to unmute yourself if you want to do that. I'm going to ask you, and then you have to click it if you do want to ask that question.
The question is kind of old already. I wanted to know who begot who, the two women. Who were the two women that were born of whom?
Okay, so
very beginning.
Okay, so let me just give the brief family tree over here. So she just wants to know who were the two women who we're talking about over here in the context of Lot, and that will, thank you, that'll allow me to segue back to Lot. We're not told their names, but Lot had two daughters. They're just known in the Torah as Lot's two daughters, just like we don't know Lot's wife's name. It's just known as Lot's wife, the pillar of salt, right? When you go to Israel. So it's just Lot's two daughters. They, each one had a son from their father. One was named Ammon, one was named Moab. Okay, actually the elder daughter went first and her son was Moab, and the younger one was Ammon. Okay, so that was, that's who was involved. Okay, all right, if you go to Israel today, good luck getting in these days, but if you go to Israel today, when you go to the area of the Dead Sea, which is where all this took place. Take care. Be well.
Thank you.
When you go to Israel today, in that part of the southern part of the country where the Dead Sea is, which is where Sodom was previously situated, okay, according to the Torah, the Dead Sea came in there after those cities were destroyed. So the whole area was laid to waste, and the Dead Sea evolved after that. So there are different, there's one rock formation that has some humanoid form to it, and there's a sign there that says Lot's wife on the side of the road. Some say there is a real source to it. It's a pretty tall person, if that's what it is. I don't know, but you can do whatever you want with that in terms of being Lot's wife. Okay, so let's get back to Lot. I want to try to understand Lot. Lot is a complex personality. On the one hand, he leaves Avram because seemingly, the way our sages, the Torah just says that his shepherds and Avram's shepherds got into a fight. Between the lines, what's going on over here, Rashi says, is they got into a fight over the fact that Lot's shepherds were being less than integral with their sheep, and that they were allowing them to graze on the land of others, while Avram's sheep were muzzled when they passed through the land of others. They only would graze on ownerless land. Okay? And when they separate, again, it's clear from Rashi, as he explained what's going on, that Lot was not interested in living up to the high ethical standards, spiritual standards that Avram had for him. Okay, that's very clear. And it says he chose Sodom because, despite Sodom's less than reputable situation in terms of their morality and so on. So Lot chose to live there anyways. And even after the War of the Kings last week, where he was captured, and Avram had to step in and save him, even after that, where he has an opportunity to go back with Avram, and where he sees what living in that part of the world got him, he doesn't. And even after Sodom is destroyed, and he's saved in the merit of Avram, he is given the opportunity to go back to Avram, and he again turns it down. He says, I don't want to live with Avram. And Rashi there, so on the one hand, it seems like Lot packed out. This is not for me. I'm not interested in this whole thing. Leave me alone. On the other hand, based on what we said before, Lot's daughters, albeit they engage in a very not ideal kind of relationship with their father, seem to have had noble intentions. Lot invites the angels into his home as guests at enormous personal risk. Okay? So what is going on over here? How do we understand Lot? Do we understand Lot as a person who saw what Avram represented and said, this is not for me, I can't live with those moral standards? But yet he does, because he's living in Sodom and he's carrying on Avram's legacy, his practice of having guests, even when it's at great personal risk. So how are we to understand that? Which is the real Lot? So an approach which is discussed by some commentators, we'll start at the bottom over here and work our way forward, two approaches that kind of dovetail together, is that Lot indeed kind of grew up in Avram's house. His father Haran died in the fires of Ur Kasdim, okay, where Avram was saved. Lot's father Haran was thrown into the fire and he was killed. So Lot, by the way, Lot's sister is Sarah. Okay, so not only is Lot Avram's nephew, it's also his brother-in-law. Talk about family entanglements in terms of splitting the business, so Lot kind of grows up in Avram's house and he was heavily influenced. We find Lot, and when Avram leaves on this journey to nowhere, God says, go to where I will take you. He takes with him his wife, and he takes with him his students, and he takes Lot. So Lot is tagging along with Avram on this journey to the unknown, willing to go with him. So clearly Lot is a disciple of sorts of Avram. Where he seems to go off the rails somewhat is when he gets rich. Because the Torah tells us what happened after Avram comes back from Egypt. Avram became very wealthy. And the Torah says Lot also became very wealthy. He got a lot of sheep. He got a lot of flocks. And this is where the trouble begins. Lot becomes very wealthy. And at this point, Lot seems to get a mind of his own. And he says, I want to do my own thing. Because this is what wealth does to people. I was just listening to a podcast now recently about the evolution of Amazon. And, you see the hubris of the founders and the CEOs of companies who become very successful. And, so they become very, very rich. And then their life kind of goes off the rails. because their hubris and their arrogance and so on leads them to make poor decisions, shall we say the least, and so on. When people become very wealthy, they also start to think that they know a lot more. What?
Start to think what?
That they know a lot more than they did before. In Yiddish, there's an expression, "Dervos hat the maya hat the daya," which means, or if you want, "Dervos hat the maya hat the daya." The one who has the maya means the hundreds. He has the daya. He has the ideas. The one with the money, he's the one who's coming with all of the good ideas. Okay. In other words, people who become wealthy suddenly think that they are the most brilliant people on the planet, even though their IQ or their intelligence level has not gone up considerably since, you know, beforehand. Yeah, go ahead.
Where does Lot's wealth come from?
I'm not sure. I didn't look into it. I'm sure someone talks about it. If I had to guess, so Rashi just says that Lot became wealthy because he was hanging out with Avram.
You think Avram maybe shared?
It's possible. It could also be, yeah. From Pharaoh. It's also possible, maybe Avram shared it. It could also be that Lot, because he was part of that inner circle, maybe got some of the riches that Pharaoh gave to Avram, he gave it to Lot as well. Yeah, it's not clear from the verses. I have not looked into it. I was wondering if this, I was just looking at that Rashi this morning. I always do the Rashis the following week. I am always a week behind, at least, on the Rashis. So I was wondering the same thing this morning. It's a fair question. Where did Lot's wealth come from? I'm not 100% sure.
Did he do a mitzvah of some sort?
Yes, he did do a mitzvah.
Like telling somebody?
Yes. Bob points out, absolutely correct. Bob points out that Rashi says, what was Lot's merit to be saved? What did he do to be saved? And this will bring us back into our discussion. So you would think, well, he put his life on the line to host these angels, right? So that was a merit that he should be saved. What did Lot do to deserve to be saved from the fires of Sodom? You would think, well, he put his life on the line for these guests. He thought they were humans. That's not what Rashi says. Rashi says that Lot's merit to be saved was that when they went down to Egypt and Avram said, "This is my sister," Lot could have ratted out Avram and gotten a nice reward for catching this smuggler or this liar at the border. You know, he could have handed him over. And Lot's, as we see, Lot's weak point was money. Okay. Incest seems to have been an issue as well. He was drunk, but he's taking the task for that as well. Seems he knew after day one what had gone on and allowed himself to become drunk again
on day two.
So even though at the time he was so drunk, he didn't know what was going on, which is a good excuse for a lot of Me Too people. I was too drunk to know what was going on, after the fact. Okay, but why'd you let yourself get to that point in the first place? Clearly you didn't care enough to avoid getting into that mess. So he's taking the task for that. But Lot's weakness is money. It's clearly money. It says that he moved to Sodom because he saw his fertile land. It was a great place for his sheep. And so Lot's weakness was money. And so he overcame that in not ratting out Avram, that he was given a merit. For inviting him, the guests, the angels, he's not given any great credit. Okay? And so commentators say that the answer, the idea here is as follows. Lot grew up in Avram's house. So the idea of having guests over, that was baked into his persona. That was how he grew up. And so it's no great, in Yiddish we say, it's nishken greise kunz. It's not a big trick. Yeah? It's not a big trick for something that comes to you naturally for you to do it.
Kunz
means a trick. A kunz means a trick, yeah. A kunzmacher is a magician. Okay? So it's not a big trick, it's not a great feat that if something comes naturally to you, for you to do it. Some people are naturally generous. So the fact that they're very generous to people, okay, people may laud them, may say they're wonderful people, but how much did they really work on it if they're naturally that way? Now, it's not for us to judge, right? I don't know whether something comes naturally to you or not, so it's not for me to judge. But God, when he looks at a person's achievements in life, he's not going to give great credit for what comes naturally to me. He's going to give me credit for what does not come naturally to me, and I had to struggle and fight, you know, with myself to overcome that. Okay? If a person is naturally stingy, and yet they give a lot of charity, they get a reward for that. If a person is naturally hot-tempered and they overcome that and remain calm under trying circumstances, they get credit for that. If someone is naturally laid back, easygoing, and so on, and they're always calm, well, that's your personality. So they don't get a lot of credit for that. Lot's challenge was money. The fact that he had guests over was because that's what he grew up with in Avram's house. That's what he experienced. That came naturally. That was just part and parcel of how he lived. He was even willing to put his life on the line to do it. Okay, but the commentators point out that where you see this goes wrong is in his decision-making process.
What?
His decision-making process. Some of that comes naturally to me. I just do it. I don't give it a lot of thought necessarily. I don't contemplate how to properly channel this talent or this personality trait. I just go and I do it. So let's say you have some people who are naturally very generous. They just spend money on everything. And they don't necessarily give thought, what's the best way to spend my money? What should I spend it on? Whom should I give it to charity-wise and so on and so forth? The fact that they give, and they give to everything and everyone sometimes gets out of hand. Okay? And so that's where a natural good trait can go off the rails. A true moral individual is the one who gives thought even to things that come naturally. For example, Avraham in this week's parasha, who is Avram's whole life is giving and helping and so on. When Sarah says throw out Yishmael, that goes totally against the grain of Avram's personality. You want me to throw out my own son from my home? I invite everyone in. I'm going to throw out my own kid. And God says, yes, that's totally against the grain. And that's why it's one of his 10 trials. Sarah's personality was more disciplinarian type. And Sarah sees Yishmael for what he is. This kid's a problem. He can't stay here. He's going to ruin everything. You have to send them packing. So Sarah's not given, you know, credit in terms of overcoming a trial. She's, you know, she never got along. She did not get along well with Hagar for years. But Avram has to overcome his natural inclination to be generous, to be giving, to help others, and throw Yishmael out. That goes totally against his grain. That's one of his, that's one of his trials, one of his later trials to boot. And so he's given credit for that. So for Lot to invite in guests and put his life on the line, he doesn't get a lot of credit for that because it seems that came naturally to him. That's what he was brought up with. That's what he lived with. That's how he lived. Where do you see that he didn't live with thinking it through? Well, when the people of Sodom show up at the door and say, send those men out, what does he do? He offers his daughters instead. In other words, he was so focused on, well, I have guests, I have to take care of the guests and so on and so forth, that he was willing to send out his own daughters instead. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, I can't help you, and let the people do what they will, okay? He's willing to sacrifice his daughters to protect his guests. That's not the proper thing to do. You can't replace anyone, leave alone your own children, to send them out instead of the guests. But Lot is so hyper-focused because, well, this is what I do. This is my tradition. This is what we do in my family. We take care of guests. You know, in certain Middle Eastern countries without naming names, of certain types of ethnic backgrounds, they're known that if you're a guest in their home, they will treat you very, very, very nicely. And they won't let any harm come to you, and they won't do anything bad to you. But as soon as you walk out of the door, a knife may end up in your back, right? So we treat guests wonderfully. Just don't walk out of my tent. Otherwise, you're a dead duck. Okay, so the idea of channeling, of bringing it into line, of calculating, that Lot didn't have. Avram has that quality. Lot has this temptation of money. He has this merit. He overcame that temptation and didn't rat out Avram when they went down to Egypt. But ultimately, Lot rejects Avram's life. What does he reject about it? I can't live my life all the time calculating what's right, what's wrong. Rashi gives the rationale. How could Lot allow his shepherds to graze their sheep on others' land? So he says that there was a rationalization. Lot's shepherds argued as follows. Avram has no kids. So who's Avram's heir? Lot. He's the closest family member. He's going to inherit everything Avram owns. Well, God promised the land of Canaan to Avram. So he already has rights to it. So we can let our sheep graze wherever we like in the land of Canaan. Avram said, no. It's not my land yet. And certainly not yours yet. It belongs to someone else. So Avram is saying, this is wrong. Lot says, what do you mean it's wrong? It's okay. It belongs to you. I'm your nephew. I'm your heir apparent. What's the big deal? I'm just, you know, changing a few numbers in the books. It's not going to harm anybody, right? If I just, a little white lie, Lot couldn't live up to that level of calculate your moves. What in every given situation is the right thing to do and the wrong thing to do? That he wasn't willing to do. So he tells Avram, I can't live like this. Zagizunt. I'm leaving. I'm going. And he goes to Sodom where he can do what basically he wants. Did he still live a somewhat moral life? Yes. Did he rebuke the people of Sodom when they came to his house? Yes. Was he as depraved as the rest of the city? No. Okay. Clearly there's something holy and low because Mashiach, the Messiah, comes from him. Ammon and Moab. Who comes from Moab? A woman named Ruth. And Ruth is the great-grandmother of a fellow named David, King David. And King David is the great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, we don't know yet, of a fellow we will know as the Messiah. So the seed of the Messiah is there in Lot. And in fact, when God saves Lot from Sodom, there's a medrash that says in the verse in Psalms, God says, I found my servant David. And the medrash says, if you read the Torah Weekly, I talk about this in this week's article, you're welcome to take a copy. When we finished, if you're on Zoom, you'll have to go to the website and see it, what is up there. But the medrash says, God says, where did I find my servant David? I found him in Sodom. I found him in Sodom. Because God saw the potential of David already present in Lot when God saved Lot from Sodom. In other words, that potential was there. There's something in Lot that's great. He moved away from it, but it's there. There's something great in Lot. But Lot is not willing to live up to that standard of, you want me to calculate everything I'm doing, right or wrong? I can't live that way. You want me to have guests over? I can have guests over. You want me to protest against injustice? I'll protest against injustice and even put my life on the line for it. But you want me to live my life in a calculated fashion of that everything I'm doing, is it right or is it wrong? I'm not willing to live up to that standard. Okay? And so therefore, what ends up happening? Well, because he's not willing to live his life that way, he's willing to let himself get drunk, which leads him to have this relationship with his daughters, right? Which is a great fall. That's a pretty steep fall for a man who was looked at as the heir apparent at one point to Avram. And here he didn't deliberately have this relationship, but he allowed himself because he's not willing to calculate. He's not willing to really think, is this right? What I'm doing now, is it really right? Or is it really, yeah, it looks okay. I don't think it's a big deal. I can rationalize it. I'll have a few drinks. What's so wrong with having a few drinks at the end of a long day of running away from a city being destroyed? You know, like what's the big deal? Okay. But because he's not willing to live at that level, that's where he loses his connection with Avram, and he is regarded in a certain sense condemned to eternal, whatever you would like to call it, not damnation, but condemnation in the fall that he took, in terms of that his end was he ended up having a relationship, an incestuous relationship with his daughters, and produced these two nations from that. Okay,
what's the capital of Jordan today?
Ammon. That's not Ammon. I don't know if that's it might be connected. But Moab, you only have to drive a few hours west and you're there. all right, so that is something to think about in terms of our own lives. Are we just like kind of generally doing the right thing? Or do we actually stop and think about, is this really right? Is it really wrong? Sometimes we tend to rationalize, yeah, it's not a big deal, you know. I'm not really saying Lashon Hara. It's probably kosher. I mean, you know, I checked the ingredients. It didn't say lard on the ingredient list. But, you know, is it really the right thing to do or not? And that's something that Lot wasn't willing to come to terms with. It's something that Avram was. Okay. Yes, go ahead. Question. Yes.
Was Sarah older than Lot?
I'm not sure.
Because he's saying that he was very young. Now, Sarah was old enough.
Sarah was older than Lot. Lot had to be pretty old by this point either way. Exactly how old he was, I'm not sure. Was he older? I have to look in the verse who's mentioned first. Because I have to look in the verse at the end of Noah. It says over there, it lists Haran's children, and it mentions a woman named Yiska. Rashi says Yiska is actually Sarah.
There's only two siblings?
There is Lot, and there is Yiska. There might be one more over there. I'm not sure. So Haran has two kids, Lot and Yiska. I have to look in the verse who's mentioned first.
Okay. Because Sarah has to be old enough to become a wife. And you're calling Lot a young child.
Who? What am I saying is a young child?
Well,
because I said he grew up in Avram's house. Yeah, well, I'm kind of using that. I don't know exactly how old he was. He may have been older, but he definitely hung out with Avram for a long time.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. So I wish everyone have a good week. That's it. We will keep an eye on your emails moving forward. We'll see if we can have a class next Monday, God willing. Yes, Bob, go ahead.
How do you know for sure that Lot really knew he had those opportunities to
Which any of them. What do you mean in terms of what? I mean, he lived with Avram. He knew what Avram was doing.
And that's it there? That should be enough?
Yeah.
He lived in the house of a righteous person?
Do I know for sure? I think this is what, you know, how different commentators understand Lot's approach. In terms of putting all the pieces together. What?
When did he live in Beersheba?
When did Avram live in Beersheba? Yeah.
Later.
After when he goes to the land of the Philistines, says he lives in Beersheba. Oh. Yeah.